Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, agriculture made its way onto the floor of question period in Parliament on Monday. We'll hear from Ontario Tory MP Philip Lawrence, as well as Federal Agriculture Minister Lawrence McAuley on that topic. Feeder steer prices in Saskatchewan were mixed last week, while heifer prices were mostly down compared to 2 weeks ago. Provincial cattle specialist Fonda Froats will be on today's program. Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture in Winnipeg has provided his weekly overview of the wheat market. You will hear that as well. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio-meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. Agriculture made its way onto the floor of question period in Ottawa yesterday. The federal Tories were demanding the government pass Bill C-234 in its original form as part of the budget speech this afternoon. That's unlikely to happen. Still, it managed to surface during the debate yesterday afternoon. Here was the exchange between Ontario Tory MP Philip Lawrence and Federal Agriculture Minister Lawrence McAuley.
Farmers have reached a breaking point. The carbon tax has driven costs sky high. They are drowning in a sea of red tape, and worst of all, they're constantly derided and demonized by this Liberal government. Will this Prime Minister finally give farmers a break and axe the tax to make food cheaper for everyone by passing Bill C-234 in its original form?
Being a farmer, I'm fully aware that farmers are on the front line of climate change. They see the devastation impact of climate change in this country and the destruction of barns, killing cattle. But also we have a price on pollution, Mr. Speaker. And along with the price on pollution, we have a Canada carbon rebate, which puts more money back in the pockets of Canadians. Mr. Speaker, why does the Conservative Party of Canada want to take that money away from Canadians?
Bill C-234 was sent back to the House of Commons just before Christmas after the majority of senators tacked on two amendments to the bill, including removing a carbon tax exemption for heating barns with propane or natural gas. Meanwhile, during a question to Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault, he revealed to the House he's been meeting with farmers across Canada. Here's his comment through a translator.
If the Conservatives had an ounce of intellectual integrity, they would admit to Canadians that 97% of fuel used on farms where there is pollution pricing is not taxed by the federal government, first of all. Secondly, do you know what I've been doing, Mr. Speaker? Recently, I've been meeting with farmers from Quebec, Alberta, Nova Scotia. I've been meeting with grain farmers, cattle farmers. They don't talk to me about carbon pricing. They talk to me about the hundreds of millions of dollars due to impacts from climate change in the farming sector in the country.
And Quick Dick McDick posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, this morning that he'd love to have one of those meetings with the federal environment minister and invited him to come to Saskatchewan for a chat. It's time now for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of Bumper to Bumper in Lanchenberg and Rokenville, your auto parts professionals. Let them find the parts no one else can. Open 8 to 6 Monday to Saturday. Call 306-743-2332.
Beef and Forage Report.
The fundamentals still look strong for cattle prices, despite recent hiccups in the futures market. That's according to a market analyst. But for those buying stockers, a little risk management can go a long way. Brian Perilat, an agribusiness specialist at Bullseye Feeds, says the bovine influenza A virus has infected one person so far, but the risk to people and cattle seems low. However, it has introduced unwanted risks to a red-hot cattle market. He says the question is whether fears around bovine influenza will affect demand. The old saying is that supply determines the price trend, but demand drives the magnitude of the price change. At these price levels, mistakes or market shifts become that much more costly. Perilat says people buying calves should have a plan and know their break-evens. Though the markets have dropped, producers could still lock in a break-even on a grasser program using price insurance. And that's the Beef and Forage Report. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
A blockade by pro-Palestinian protesters at a major port terminal in Metro Vancouver disrupted operations for several hours before dispersing yesterday. Terminal operator GCT Canada said the protesters' actions were illegal and stopped container trucks from accessing the Delta Port facility by blocking the Roberts Bank Causeway for several hours. The Port of Vancouver is the largest port in Canada, and GCT Delta Port is the country's largest container terminal, with capacity to handle 2.4 million standard 20-foot containers every year. GCT spokesman Marco Dekovic said the company was not warned of the blockade beforehand and did not know why Delta Port was targeted. Trade and transport infrastructure experts say while the disruption from such a blockade is inconvenient for truckers stuck at the terminal gates, it is unlikely to cause serious backlogs. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 71% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 36, a slight decline from the 74% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 35. CN and CPKC each saw a modest deterioration in performance as compared to the prior week. In supplying 68% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 36, CN saw performance decline from the 70% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 35. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the 14th consecutive week. CPKC performance also declined slightly from the prior week, with the railway supplying 75% of shipper orders in Week 36 as compared to 79% in the prior week. CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the 12th consecutive week. Research from a recent $1.9 million federal funding announcement will have a more philosophical take on the future of sustainable agriculture. The research hopes to answer questions such as what are the social barriers to sustainable farming and food, and how can the burden and benefits of that transition be shared equitably? The federal government pledged the cash recently to launch the Common Ground Canada Network. The initiative will be led by Dalhousie University's Karen Foster, Canada Research Chair in Sustainable Rural Futures for Atlantic Canada. The hard science of sustainable agriculture, things like improved agronomic practices, are already the purview of other research organizations and government funding streams. The network, in contrast, has a goal to tackle the topic from the angle of sociology, social anthropology, political sciences, economics, the humanities, and other lenses. Denmark has agreed to help farmers finance a feed additive that is expected to reduce methane emissions from cattle by up to 30% as part of efforts to meet ambitious climate goals. Denmark, a major dairy exporter, could become the first country in the world to price agricultural emissions, including methane emissions from burping cows, a move that has broad political backing. Methane, a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, is a natural byproduct of digestion in cows and other ruminants that is released into the atmosphere. The Nordic country has pledged to reduce emissions by 70% by 2030 compared to 1990 levels. More than half of Denmark's land is farmed, with agriculture accounting for about a third of the country's carbon emissions. Cannabis company Tilray Brands reported a loss of $105 million U.S. in its latest quarter, as its net revenue rose nearly 30% compared with a year earlier. Tilray adds that it no longer expects positive adjusted free cash flow for its full financial year due to the delayed timing for collecting cash on various asset sales. The company, which keeps its books in U.S. dollars, says its loss for the quarter amounted to 12 cents per diluted share for the quarter ended February 29th. The result compared with a loss of $1.2 billion U.S. or $1.90 per diluted share in the same quarter last year, when it recorded a large one-time impairment charge. Net revenue in what was the company's third quarter totaled $188.3 million, up from $145.6 million a year earlier. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's today's Ag Review. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. We have light rain and 6 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Feeder steer prices in Saskatchewan were mixed last week, while heifer prices were mostly down compared to 2 weeks ago. The cattle market update for the week ending April 12th has been released, and provincial cattle specialist Fonda Froats has the prices for 4 steer weight categories and where prices ranged for the heifers.
Average prices ranged from $424.88 per hundredweight for the 5 to 600 weight steers, down to $321.93 for the 8 to 900 pound steers. The biggest change was in the average price of the 5 to 600 pound steers, which declined considerably by $18.62 per hundredweight. Meanwhile, we've seen the average price for the 8 to 900 pound steers increase by $5.43 per hundredweight compared to the previous week, and those prices range between $300 to $350 per hundredweight. And average prices for Saskatchewan heifers range from $391.50 per hundredweight for the 4 to 500 pound heifers down to $303.40 for the 800 plus pound category. Saskatchewan heifer prices were mixed, but mostly down compared to the last available Saskatchewan feeder heifer prices 2 weeks ago.
By comparison, Froats notes Alberta cattle prices were higher from the previous week.
Yeah, it's good news here. Average cow prices were at record highs again compared to the previous week. D2 cows averaged $174.54 per hundredweight, which was an average increase of $2.86 above the previous week. The price of D3 cows increased $8.73 per hundredweight over the week to average $162.79 per hundredweight. Alberta cow prices have continued to set new record highs each week since March. And then another price high was set in the fed steers. CanFac reported Alberta fed steers for the week ending April 12th at $250.47 per hundredweight, which was a price increase of $6.02 per hundredweight over the previous week.
She says the cattle market lost some momentum that was seen at the start of the year due to uncertainty around the U.S. cattle supply.
USDA just adjusted some of their own 2024 production estimates, and also we're continuing to see the bovine avian influenza, which has contributed to declines in the futures contract. So I guess it's important to remember that these are still strong prices, well above a year ago and well above the start to the year, so we'll just keep our fingers crossed.
CanFax reported 13,188 head of Saskatchewan feeder cattle sold last week, well above the 3,981 head marketed last week.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 175.72. That's up 190. August live cattle closed at 172.92, up 180. May feeder cattle closed at 240.97. That's up 297. August feeder cattle closed at 252.35, up 257. June lean hogs closed at 102.82, up 37. July lean hogs closed at 104.02, up 27. And that's the livestock market conditions. Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture has provided his weekly overview of the wheat market. It was issued through the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission.
There were no big surprises in Thursday's USDA report, although some of the bulls were disappointed as they were expecting larger revisions in South America's corn crop. This impacted the wheat futures negatively as well. As far as some of the most important news that happened in the wheat markets last week, we will start with Thursday's USDA WASDA report. For the global wheat balance sheet, the USDA decreased ending stocks by 600,000 tons, as a 700,000 ton increase in production was offset by lower beginning stocks and more use. Most of the increase in production from last month was in the EU, where production was lifted by 500,000 tons. Global ending stocks at the end of the 23-24 crop season are now expected to be 258.3 million tons, which is 5% less than last year and smaller than the average trade guess. Most of the decrease in stocks from last month were in the Black Sea, while ending stocks in the EU and US were seen higher month over month. As far as the U.S. wheat goes, the USDA left exports unchanged, while decreases in feed use added 25 million bushels to ending stocks. The largest decrease in use was said to be in hard red spring wheat, where feed use was reduced by 20 million bushels. Hard red spring wheat ending stocks were said to be 20 million bushels higher at 197 million bushels, up 27% from last year. U.S. wheat imports were reduced by 5 million bushels, given lower imports, primarily of hard red winter wheat. Ending stocks are now expected to be 698 million bushels, which is 22% more than last year, and 7 million bushels more than the average trade guess. And while we're talking about U.S. wheat, we will continue on with their weekly sales report, which was reported at 81,000 old crop wheat sales over the week. Total old crop commitments are now 692 million bushels, up 3% from last year. This is compared to the USDA's unchanged estimate of 4.5% lower exports year over year. So U.S. export sales continue to track along well. There are 555,000 tons of unshipped sales to China, which are concerning given some of the recent cancellations that they've been making over the past few weeks. New crop wheat sales were 274,000 tons for a total commitment number of 57 million bushels. This is more than double last year's volume to date. Spring wheat planting in the U.S. is in line with average at 3% complete. Farmers in Western Canada are also slowly starting to get started this week, and we expect seeding will be fairly widespread by the week of the 21st. And now we'll move on over to Canada. Week 36 wheat exports were excellent at over 500,000 tons shipped during the week. The strong performance was partially due to the opening of the Great Lakes. The first ship of the season arrived at Richardson International's port in Thunder Bay on March 24th. Beating last year's first ship of the season by a full 2 days and tying the 2008 record for the earliest opening date for the port. Exports for the eastern ports accounted. Exports from the eastern ports accounted for 100 and almost 50,000 tons of the total week 36 volume. Year-to-date exports from Canada are now 14.8 million tons, which is 6% above last year compared to the AEFC's forecast for a 2% decrease. We are estimating a 4% increase from last year. For Durham, week 36 Durham exports were 90.2 thousand tons and remain well ahead of the weekly pace needed to meet the AFC's 3.2 million ton export estimate. Exports for the remainder of the season need to average just under 50,000 tons per week. Terminal receipts were split between East and West Coasts. There was 457,000 tons of visible supply in the elevator system. Most of this is in primary elevators and needs to make its way to export positions. There are, however, 106.3 thousand tons of Durham sitting in the St. Lawrence, all ready to go. And while we're talking about Durham, we'll just give a quick update on the Turkish Durham crop, given that their export program had a huge impact on our local export program, which makes the 2024 Turkish crop quite important. According to a recent report by the USDA Ag Attaché in Turkey, the total Turkish wheat crop for the upcoming season is forecast to remain unchanged from last year at 19.8 million tons. While acreage is higher by about 50,000 tons, yields are expected to be down slightly, in line with more normal weather. Of this total projected amount, nearly 4.4 million tons is expected to be Durham, up 10% from last year as farmers seek to export a larger share of production to take advantage of relatively strong global prices for Durham wheat. Importantly, 2024-25 Durham wheat exports were put at 2 million tons, assuming the government will again authorize the export of excess Durham wheat. Remember that old crop Durham exports were estimated at 1.5 million tons, so this would be a 500,000-ton increase from the previous year. Meanwhile, wheat imports this year by Turkey are only being used by the pasta and flour re-export business because of the trade prohibitive tariff of 130% on imported wheat, which has been in place since last May. As far as our Durham recommendations go, you should be sold out of old crop. There's no reason to be holding on to old crop Durham at the current environment, in the current environment, and we recommend selling 30% of expected new crop Durham at the current price. And we'll head on over to Australia. Australian wheat futures were lower last week. The USDA left Australia's production number at 26 million tons, but increased its exports by 500,000 tons. These resulted in a respective decrease in ending stocks to 3.1 million tons, down 30% from last year. Abarys is projecting that Australia's wheat area in the upcoming year will be 1 to 3% higher last year, given the La Nina and strong demand from China. In Argentina, the only change the USDA made to Argentina's wheat balance sheet was a 500,000-ton reduction to exports, resulting in a 500,000-ton increase in ending stocks. At 3.3 million tons, Argentina's ending stocks are expected to shrink by just 18% from last year. In India, the developing situation in India will be important to watch. The USDA increased 2023-24 wheat consumption there by 2 million tons and decreased imports by 130,000 tons. These revisions tightened India's wheat balance sheet by another 2.1 million tons from last month. Ending stocks in India are expected to be 6.9 million tons, which is 27% tighter than last year and the lowest volume since 2007. The USDA Post in India is estimating that the current wheat harvest will produce a 2% larger crop than the previous year of 112.5 million tons. Despite the record production, low beginning stocks will force the country to import wheat, and we believe it will be upwards of 2 million tons of wheat in the upcoming marketing year. India is estimated to only have imported 120,000 tons of wheat in the current year. Unchanged use would mean ending stocks would grow slightly to 7.6 million tons, which would be the second lowest volume in 17 years. Meanwhile, Indian millers think the crop is way less than the USDA's thoughts at 105 million tons, We think that this is too low from what we have heard. In the European Union, wheat futures in the EU did not like the USDA increasing the EU ending stock number by another 1.5 million tons. Ending stocks in the EU are now expected to be 16.7 million tons, which is 4% more than last year. And we note that USDA's ending stock number is still well below the EU Commission's estimate of 21.1 million tons. Higher ending stocks in the EU were the result of offsetting changes to beginning stocks and production. Meanwhile, imports were raised by 500,000 tons, feed use was up by 1 million tons, and exports were down by 2 million tons. The condition of the French wheat crop fell another point over the week to 64% good to excellent. And in the Black Sea, according to the USDA, Ukraine's beginning stocks were decreased by 600,000 tons, along with a 400,000 ton reduction in use. Exports were up by 1.5 million tons for a 1.7 million ton decrease in ending stocks. The USDA decreased Russian feed use by 1 million tons while increasing exports respectively. Ending stocks were in Russia were left unchanged. The Russian exporter Rif Trading House is suspending operations in its Azov Sea terminal due to disputes surrounding phytosanitary certifications. Additionally, the Russian government increased the wheat export tax by 1.3% to 95 cents per bushel for the period from April 17th to the 23rd. As far as some of the significant purchases and trades last week, well, there was not a whole lot to speak of. Buyers seem to be largely covered for old crop. There has been no new crop business done as traders are concerned about the weather and farmers do not like the prices. As far as some of the other global events that are impacting the grain markets, we saw the funds buying back some of its short position in wheat, but they have a bit more to go there yet. There's no great surprises in the USDA WASDA report, and it was a bit of a disappointment to the bulls, which were expecting larger decreases, especially in South American corn production. Russia continues to bombard Ukraine with missiles and drones. Russia has moved its attention to key power plants, but also attacked the major port city of Odessa again last week. While this used to elicit reactions from the markets, the market has become fairly numb to these sorts of news, given the incredible resiliency of Ukraine's exporters. The breadth of countries exchanging rockets and drones has extended to destination grain markets. Iran launched a barrage of drones and missiles over the weekend at Israel in response to their strike on the Iranian consulate in Syria. As far as the outlook goes, the international climate remains fractious, particularly in the Middle East. We are slowly seeing energy prices increase and inflation starting to rise. In our view, world buyers are largely finished with old crop purchases, and futures will be moved by whatever the funds or farmers need to do. We see old crop wheat prices going lower as carrying charges increase, while there will be little trade in the new crop while traders remain concerned about weather, and growers don't like the values. We would target the remaining spring wheat sales at about 10 cents over the current values, but would not sell any new crop for now.
That's Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture in Winnipeg. Please stay tuned. Your Commodities Update is coming up next.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed down across the board again today. May canola closed at $6.12.50, down $7.40. July canola closed at $6.23.50, down $7.90. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.38.25, that's up 1.25 cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.87.5, up 3.5 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.49.75, down 2 cents. May corn closed at $4.31 per bushel, down 0.5 cent. May soybeans closed at $11.45 per bushel, down 13 and a quarter cents. May oats closed at $3.46 per bushel, down 11 and three quarters of a cent. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will resume right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Last Saturday night, six people were inducted into the Saskatchewan Agricultural Hall of Fame. One of the inductees was Les Johnston from Fillmore in the southeast part of the province. In addition to his own cattle operation, Les was a longtime 4-H volunteer as a club leader, a show judge, and the first vice chair of the Saskatchewan 4-H alumni at the University of Saskatchewan. Johnston was also involved in the launch of the National Cattle Identification Program more than 20 years ago. This is veterinarian Dr. Gary Hoyam, who made the introductory speech Saturday for Les Johnston.
Les traveled literally thousands of miles, crisscrossing our great province, introducing, delivering, and explaining these programs at grassroots town hall producer information meetings. He told me on occasion that the meetings became heated and sometimes required Les's lifetime experience, people skills, and expertise to calm down and win over any doubters. In 2017, he became being fully committed to and believing wholeheartedly in these national programs. Les ultimately and enthusiastically embraced the opportunity to be trained as a sustainable beef auditor, after which he conducted many audits in Saskatchewan and a few in Manitoba when they were short auditors. He was soon recognized as Saskatchewan's lead auditor. From December 2018 to December 2019, Les conducted more on-farm audits than any other auditor in Canada. By 2019, a portion of his time was also being spent assisting new auditors and leading shadow audits, granting new participants full auditor accreditation.
Johnston also gave credit to Dr. Hoyam, who purchased some cattle from him in 2004.
After we made the deal on the group of heifers, he shook my hand and he looked at me and he said, "Okay, now I want you to teach me everything you know about the cattle business." And I actually giggled because I thought he was joking, because he's the brains of the operation and he's got the degrees and da-da-da-da-da. And he said, "No." He said, "You know stuff." And I said, "I know what kind of stuff?" And he said, "You know things and you do things that other producers aren't doing." And you know, sometimes you get living in your own little world and your nose is to the grindstone and you don't realize. You just think everybody's doing the same thing. Thanks to Gary, in the next 2 years, I had six articles published and one documentary that's still airing. I'm actually airing longer than Mark and Mindy, so I feel pretty good about that.
Johnston is a tireless promoter of the beef sector, being interviewed for various articles and at least one television documentary. He also paid tribute to his neighbors in the Fillmore area.
Urban people don't realize how reliant we are on our neighbors. And they're your EMS, they are your fire department, they are your police force. They're there to pull calves, they're there to pull you out of the mud. They cry with you, they laugh with you in every family crisis that you have. I had about 20 to 25 of those in our area, and I farmed with every one of them, and I want to thank them. You can learn more from your neighbors at a kitchen table than you ever will out of a textbook.
Les Johnston was one of six people inducted into the Saskatchewan Agricultural Hall of Fame on Saturday night in Saskatoon. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Increasing cloud with a 60% chance of scattered showers, winds east-southeast at 20 to 30, and a high of 12 degrees. For tonight, a 40% chance of scattered rain, winds northwest at 25 to 35, gusting to 50 at times, a low of 3. For tomorrow, a 70% chance of spotty showers, then steadier rain. Winds northwest at 35 to 45, gusting to 60 at times, a high of plus 4, an overnight low of minus 3. For Thursday, windy, with a 60% chance of snow showers, 2 to 3 centimeters possible, a high of minus 1. For Friday, windy, with a 60% chance of flurries, that'll diminish, a high of minus 1. And Saturday, mainly sunny, a high of plus 5. In the Paw, it's 1 degree. Swan River, Dauphin, and Brandon are at 5. Show Lake Russell and Roblin, 4. Regina, 11 degrees. Saskatoon, 7. Hudson Bay, 4. Broadview, Mooseman, 5. Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 8. The Yorkton-Melville region has light rain, an east-southeast wind at 22 kilometers an hour. 95% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 6 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.